Hello and welcome to the Armchair Express. I am your host, Grant Baker. We are excited to be back with you for a new NFL season. Joining me today is Rob Paul.
Hey, I cover the LA Rams in the NFL draft for Armchair All-Americans.
Richard Cano.
Hey guys, writer for America's team, the Dallas Cowboys.
And Brett Batchelor.
Hey guys, what's up? I'm Brett Batchelor, covering the Tennessee Titans.
So we got a lot of things to get into. We're going to discuss the quarterback battles going on in training camp, namely among the rookies, guys like Mitch Trubisky, DeShone Kizer, all those guys. And we're going to get into the trades that the Buffalo Bills have made. But first, we're going to get on into the Ezekiel Elliott suspension. Now, Richard, you do cover the Dallas Cowboys. I want you to get into the first six games that Elliott will be gone and how that will affect the Cowboys. Just let us know how many games you think they'll win, what kind of impact that'll have for your season.
Well, for sure the impact is going to be substantial. You're taking out the league's leading rusher, a guy that made Dak Prescott's job a million times easier. Looking at the first 6 weeks, we have five games, and then we have our bye week six, and then we have week seven. So it looks like Elliott will be out for the Giants, at the Broncos, at the Cardinals, and then hosting the Rams and the Packers. Following the bye week, we would go to San Francisco. Looking at that lineup and without Elliott, trying to be as realistic as possible, I would say I don't think 6-0. I don't see a start like that happening. I would have to say 3-3. The only thing working in the favor of this 6 weeks is that there's only one division game, and that would be the opener. After that, we have a lot of NFC and then one AFC. So I could see them winning the Cardinals, the Rams, and the 49ers, and I think the Giants, Broncos, and Packers are the ones that would probably be the toughest to win without Zeke.
One thing that this suspension really lets us get into is just how good Dak Prescott actually is. I mean, I know that was a big debate among NFL fans. Some people were saying he should have been MVP last year, which I think was ridiculous. Some people said he was just an average quarterback being held up by a great talent around him and a phenomenal offensive line. But I kind of want to get into the specifics of it, whether you guys think he should have been suspended, whether he should have been suspended for as long as he did, and whether the suspension will be reduced at all.
For sure, I felt that there was a suspension coming just because his off-the-field behavior hasn't been ideal or perfect in any way whatsoever. I didn't see six games, though. I thought it was going to be four at the most. But like the article says in the collective bargaining agreement, Goodell doesn't really need any type of convictions or anything to pass down suspensions. And the new baseline for domestic violence is six games, so I mean, you can credit them for going off of their new rules, but I didn't see six games coming. I honestly thought it was going to be four or at the least the first two, and then maybe that would shake him and help him mature a little.
And with the appeal, I'm sure it'll be brought down to four, maybe even three games, but it's just such a odd situation. Not that we have any of the details about it, so it's hard for us to speak on, but it's just with no conviction, a lot of the evidence seems somewhat fishy, and the witnesses all testified they didn't see anything. It's a very weird story, and Zeke's off-field behavior since then is obviously fed into the situation.
That's a great point. Now, replacing Zeke, we've got Darren McFadden and we've got Alfred Morris. McFadden had some good years early in his career, kind of got stuck on some really, really bad Raiders teams. But in 2015, he was actually pretty productive. Brett, what do you expect from Darren McFadden and Alfred Morris through those six games this year?
I mean, I think that they can do okay. I mean, certainly they can do, but it helps that they have a kind of more like a 1-2 punch that they can use now. Alfred was a fairly good back before he came over to Dallas, and same thing with Darren. So it's probably enough to keep the ball rolling. Obviously, teams and defenses won't be as scared. They won't have to load the boxes as much, anything like that. So it might make it a little easier for the defenses now, but the Cowboys can scheme it differently to where they can do things with Alfred, they can do things with Darren, and use their speed and their strengths in ways that they might not be able to use Zeke. So while that's not going to be the exact same with not having Zeke on the field, they can do things differently to scheme it and create different plays.
That's a good point. It's really going to hurt them, certainly, being in the tough division that they're in, playing that really tough schedule. Let's go ahead and move on to some of the quarterback training camp battles. And we'll start with Mike Glennon versus the number two overall pick, Mitchell Trubisky. Rob, I want your take on this first. Glennon certainly was not impressive in his first preseason game, and Trubisky came on and really impressed a lot of people. What did you think?
Well, of all the top-end rookie QBs who played week one of the preseason, Trubisky played in the most real NFL offense, I'd say. If you watch Kaiser, if you watch Watson, they spent most of their time in shotgun, 11 personnel. Well, Trubisky played under center most frequently. And the OC did a good job helping Trubisky by calling a lot of rollout plays, so he cut the field in half for him. But I did not expect him to blow the game up the way he did. And I think the game also showed how athletic he is, something maybe not everybody knew coming out of North Carolina.
That's a good point. Brett, Richard, you guys have any opinion on, you know, Trubisky versus Glennon? Who do you think will start week one, that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, it certainly didn't help Glennon that he threw a pick six 1 minute into the game. I mean, I know obviously that it's a preseason game and things happen, but it's just kind of funny to see things like that, how that played out. But, yeah, I mean, Mitch looked good. I mean, we only saw 13 games for him starting in North Carolina. People were really skeptical when he got picked at number two. And he was even booed at a Bulls game when he got drafted. So people really didn't know what the move was. But, I mean, one of his touchdown passes was to Victor Cruz, and that's, going to help either whoever is in the backfield, whether it's Glennon or Trubisky, a lot. And having Jordan Howard behind them, because they can really open up the field with that. So it's going to play out through the four preseason games of really who they're going to want to see. I mean, it's probably going to be Glennon starting just because of the contract they gave him, and they kind of have to go with that. But, I mean, Mitch made it a lot bigger deal than a lot of people thought he would.
And the biggest bang on Trubisky coming out of NC was he only played in the 13 games, like Brett said, and he just needs reps. So it makes the Glennon – with Glennon's poor performance in that contract – look so ridiculous right now, especially with Trubisky looking good. I mean, it was against second team defense, but Glennon looked unplayable.
You're right. Glennon actually this year is making has the same salary cap hit as Tom Brady, which is interesting. I mean, every year whenever these guys get drafted, especially these one-year starters or these spread system quarterbacks, we always hear, oh, we don't want to play them right away. We want them to sit. We want them to wait a year. But it seems like they always get thrown into the mix week four, week five, week six, when the starter's not doing too well. I think it's going to be a similar situation. Glennon's going to come out, play really poorly the first two, three, four games, and they're going to have to put in Trubisky. And, you know, I wasn't that high on him coming out of the draft. Rob, I know you weren't either. Neither one of us had him as our top quarterback. But if he keeps playing like this, and again, preseason, you can't take too much away from it. Chicago, you've got your franchise quarterback. Let's move on to Deshaun Watson. For Houston. I personally did not see his first preseason game, but I heard a lot of good things, heard he was very athletic. What did you guys think about that one?
He had a lot of command in the pocket, and he has real good legs, which is something that the Texans haven't had in a quarterback in quite some time. He looked pretty steady and ready to go. I don't know if he's starter ready, but he's definitely in the running for that quarterback one race. And I know the media down here in Houston is hyping him up that he needs to be the starter, but Savage is not going to let this go without a fight, and he knows the playbook better. But there is a good chance for Watson to potentially, maybe within midseason, if Savage isn't working out, to take over the reins and do pretty decent.
The offense looked a lot like Brock Osweiler-led offense last year when Savage was in the game, just a lot of dump-offs. And the offensive line played terribly. So when Watson came into the game, he kind of made up for the offensive line with fantastic pocket awareness, keeping plays alive with his legs. And he made a lot of good decisions. Like, he threw the ball away when there was nothing there. He did struggle with accuracy down the field. Like, he missed a few seam passes. And the offense was really tailored to – it was almost like he was playing in Clemson's offense. He was basically in a spread offense the entire time. All shotgun, all 11 personnel, really. A lot of play action rollouts to split the field in half. But overall, he looked significantly better than Savage, and I don't see any way Savage beats him.
That's like Richard said, though, if Savage does get the nod to start, because like we said, he knows the play group better, he's been there longer, so many people are hyping him up. Like John McClain from the Houston Chronicle is really big on him, said he looks so good in training camp. Same thing with Bill O'Brien. If it comes to the fact of if it's midseason and Houston's around 500 or a little bit below 500, especially with the defense they have, and they feel that Deshaun can come in there and make things better, then I think that Houston's going to throw Deshaun in there and say, look, this is your time now. This is why we drafted you. Let's get the ball going.
Right, you mentioned that defense, especially that front seven. Their front seven, I think, man for man, is arguably the best in the NFL, especially having two absolutely destructive defensive linemen in Watt and Clowney. I think it's interesting how I know a lot of Houston fans were really big on Tom Savage last year. He's yet to throw an NFL touchdown pass. Certainly not exactly a proven guy, but like we said, Watson came from a spread offense. It'd be nice if he could get some time to wait, and maybe Savage allows him to have that bridge into Watson in the future. Next, let's talk about Deshaun Kizer for the Browns. A lot of people really like this. Really liked what they saw from him, especially that game-winning touchdown pass. Wait, your thoughts?
So Kizer threw 19 passes, if you include the two-point attempt. I believe 17 of those 19 passes were out of shotgun, and 16 were out of 11 personnel. He was also playing – you got to remember that he was playing the Saints backups and, like, third-string fringe players, and they're playing a lot of soft coverage. But on the other hand, Kizer was fantastic at keeping plays alive in the pocket. His pocket awareness was awesome. He was avoiding pressure, stepping up, making big throws, not afraid to air it out. He kind of looked like old-school Dante Culpepper.
Wow. High praise.
Well, you know I love him.
Yeah, it's true. We were both really big on him coming out last year as a pro-style guy with a nice arm. Anybody else have anything to say about Kizer?
Well, I mean, yeah, he looks good in camp, like a lot of people said. With everybody, there's issues coming out of college and things you can work on. But the whole Browns organization has liked him since he got drafted, and the way that he's looked in camp, and like we said before, he played well in the first preseason game. So we'll have to see how it expands through the rest of the preseason and the rest of the Browns quarterbacks to see who the starter is really going to be.
Yeah, it's really going to be a toss-up, but I'd have to say with his performance in that first game, I'd probably give him a slight lead right now just because of it being the Browns organization.
Well, that's true. And then finally, the last first-round quarterback, Pat Mahomes. Now, he's in a different situation than the other three because Kansas City already has a legitimate starting quarterback and Alex Smith. By no means a world-class quarterback, but someone that can get the job done. We just teamed to double-digit wins in the playoffs, has proven his ability to do that. Now, Mahomes has a massive arm, incredible arm talent. He's a good athlete. What did you guys think about that first game? How early do you think Mahomes will take over for Smith? Will it happen this year, next year, or do you think it'll just be until Smith retires?
It's going to be at least 2 years. Mahomes did not look good at all to me. His opening, the opening pass of his career was a bomb down the field that got called back, but he underthrew the ball. Then the next three plays, they just ran screen passes with him. He looked like he didn't know how to do a three or a five-step drop, and his feet would freeze in the pocket a lot of the time. And even on his touchdown pass, it was like classic Texas Tech days ad-libbing, and he just lobbed it up, and it was a super dangerous throw. And I don't know. Alex Smith's clearly the starter there, and I don't think Mahomes will touch the field this year at least.
I don't think so either. And then, yeah, that's a good point, bringing up that Texas Tech offense. It's a lot of airing it out, and that just – he doesn't have very good pocket presence yet, but I think he can develop to be the quarterback of the future for the Chiefs. But it's Smith's job right now, and I don't see it happening for, like Rob said, maybe 2 to 3 years.
You know, a lot of people look at Alex Smith as not necessarily a Super Bowl winning quarterback, but more of as a game manager. But the game manager quarterback has gotten them to the playoffs and gotten them division wins and double digit wins. So really, there's no reason to go away from that right now. For I guess you could call Pat Mahomes a project for the future. So even though he's the number 10 overall pick, but like y'all said, with him airing it out and just lobbing up there, the Chiefs don't necessarily have the receivers for that to go up there and get it either. So right now it's Alex Smith's job for until they're ready to just completely move away from him.
I think we all agree Alex Smith is a solid quarterback, but at the same time, 10 and 11 win seasons and losing in the first round of the playoffs doesn't really get you anything. And how many times have the Chiefs stalled in the playoffs because their quarterback just can't throw deep? I mean, I would watch film on them last year, and when he did attempt passes of greater than 30 yards down the field, he was really hit or miss. His ball placement wasn't great. So the fact that Kansas City went out and got a guy that can go win you games, now granted he can lose you games to the poor decision-making, I thought that was a really big risk, especially because they traded that first-round pick to Buffalo. And speaking of Buffalo, they were in the news this past week for making a couple of really interesting trades. They traded Sammy Watkins away to the Rams for a corner named E.J. Gaines and a second-round pick next year. Then they turned around and traded away their young corner, Ronald Darby, to the Eagles in exchange for Jordan Matthews and a third-round pick next year. So the Bills now have two first, two second, and two third-round picks in 2018. However, their personnel moves are kind of interesting. Rob, you cover the Rams. Tell us what E.J. Gaines brings to the table, or was he just a guy that they needed to throw in there for salary cap reasons?
Well, Gaines' rookie year out of Missouri, his rookie year playing nickel for the Rams, he's actually pretty good and he's very physical. And then his second year, he tore his ACL. And last year, he was basically unplayable. Like, he was not good whatsoever last year. And he's more of a zone corner, so I'm guessing that's kind of why Sean McDermott was okay to go out and get him as some sort of compensation. And I mean, he doesn't have the skill set Ronald Darby has whatsoever as a replacement, but he does fit more what McDermott likes in a corner than I guess Ronald Darby did.
Okay, and this is like – I've seen this compared to NBA trades where – you trade a guy away in his contract year because you don't want to pay him the extension due to the injury history and you're worried. You just get some compensation back because you're probably going to let him go the next year anyway. And getting that second round pick is really nice. That could be a top 35, top 40 pick in this next draft. Brett, Richard, did you guys have any opinions on the Watkins trade, what it'll do to Los Angeles, what it'll do for Buffalo?
I'd have to say the Watkins trade definitely it helps Goff. It helps the Rams. It looks like a nice increase. And I was watching that game. Unfortunately, Watkins didn't play against Dallas. But the Rams could have something to work with here, and especially getting a weapon like Watkins, if he can stay healthy, will definitely pay dividends. And then that defense under Wade Phillips is going to be more formidable than I thought it was. So it's increasing the Rams where they have a very good shot at making some noise in the NFC West.
Yeah, I definitely think that Sammy to the Rams helped out their offense, like you said, if he can stay healthy. Because that's been a big thing throughout his career is not being able to stay healthy. But if he can stay healthy, I mean, it's hard to believe that Sammy Watkins is only 24 years old. And, I mean, it seems like he's a lot older than that, but he has 153 receptions for over 2,000 yards so far in his career. So if he can break that open down the sideline in L.A., then that also opens up the field for Todd Gurley to have a much better season than what he did last year. So bringing Sammy in there and working with Jared Goff also not only helps the team, but helps out the entire offense in general and probably helps the Rams in a big way.
Yeah, Watkins is only a day older than Cooper Kupp, who was the Rams' most outstanding receiver in week one of the preseason. And the receiving corps seems a lot more complete with Watkins. He's the perfect X receiver in Sean McVay's offense and puts Robert Woods in more of a role he fits as a Z, like more of a possession guy. And Kupp's looking like he'll be the starting slot receiver, and Tavon Austin's going to be the odd man out.
Wow, that's interesting. Let's shift to the Bills-Eagles trade. The Bills gave up Ronald Darby. I thought he was a very talented corner. In exchange for Jordan Matthews and a third-round pick. I got to see Jordan Matthews at Vanderbilt whenever he was in college. I think he's a very good possession receiver. I think he's best as your number three, though. I really don't even like him as a number two. What do you guys think about that deal?
Well, it's going to be weird with them bringing Anquan Boldin in already. It's kind of like the same bigger slot receiver at this point. Neither's really an outside guy. And like you said, Darby is their most talented defensive back, and the Bills did not have a great defensive back group outside of maybe Trey White, the rookie first-round pick. But Darby, I guess, like I said, Darby doesn't really fit what McDermott looks for in a corner, and I guess he just – him and Bean want to bring their guys in.
Well, the Eagles were in really big need of cornerback help, especially. But Darby's more of a man guy, is he not? Don't the Eagles play cover three, from what I remember, or do they play man?
It's Schwartz. I thought they played cover three.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
But, their cornerback group's so bad because Sidney Jones is still recovering from the Achilles. Rasul Douglas, their other rookie, is so raw. Like, their number two corner is like Nolan Carroll, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Schwartz, I think he runs the cover three mostly, from what I remember from that Sunday night game last year when Dallas put out the overtime win. And that was a big issue, I think, because they were able to get the interception with their middle linebacker core. So I think they run a cover three, if I'm not mistaken.
All right. Well, Buffalo certainly is now built for the future with those six picks in the first three rounds next year. And, of course, they have an entire year to make even more moves. Did you guys have any other thoughts on what Buffalo is doing? It seems to me that they traded a B-plus wide receiver for a B-minus C-plus wide receiver and a B-plus corner for a C-minus corner and got a couple of, you know, early mid-round picks. But I'm not sure how I feel about that. Is there anything else you guys wanted to bring up before we wrap it all up?
The Bills are just in tank mode at this point.
Yeah. Jordan Matthews he didn't really work out in Philly, and he's yet to have a 1,000-yard receiving season in his career. I mean, he has over 2,000 yards total, but he hasn't hit that 1,000-yard mark yet in a season. So, I mean, and he has issues with his hands. I mean, he's been known to drop a couple balls, especially balls that really should have been caught. So giving up Sammy Watkins for that, it's not really what you would think for an ideal situation at all.
And Matthews already got hurt in Buffalo. He chipped his sternum.
Right. Looks like LeSean McCoy is going to have about 500 carries this season. But, all right, guys, thank you for tuning in. That's going to be the end of the show today. If you enjoyed it, you can check us out on Twitter at AC All Americans. If you want just our football coverage, you can check us out at Armchair NFL. We do all kinds of pieces for you guys. We do podcasts. We do writing, all sorts of things. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to tune in next week.